So, Hakol Shochtim, to go back to the word one, literally, of day one. So we see that the Mishnah tells us that everyone can shecht, and we discussed it doesn't actually mean everyone, it doesn't actually mean everyone on the same level. There are some lechachilas, there are some bidievas, there are some not at alls, and we spent some time considering what exactly that means, what exactly that says for us. So one thing that we didn't discuss, maybe because this is an all boys school, so what about women? So what about nashim? Can nashim shecht? So what do you think? Can nashim shecht? Okay, I got one vote for yes, two votes for yes.
Yes.
Yes, three votes for yes.
No.
No, okay. I think just to be contrary, so we have...
Is
it Yerushalmi? So it's not Yerushalmi, just to be more accurate, it's Hilchas Eretz Yisrael, is different than Yerushalmi. It's different, certainly, hugely different as far as authority. But apparently there was this individual, Eldad Hadoni, who wrote the Sefer Hilchas Eretz Yisrael, that is quoted here by the Rishonim. And
is he a Rishon or more of a Gaon?
So it's a good question what exactly his story is. And we're not going to try to address that right now, but somebody's quoted here in the Rishonim what exactly the stature, what exactly the authority is. It's a good question, but we see that it's enough for the Rishonim to take it seriously without endorsing his conclusion. So those of you who voted that Nashim can shecht, so that is clearly the view of the vast majority of authoritative Rishonim. And it is the bottom line of the Shulchan Aruch also. In the Ramah, we'll see, it gets a little more complicated, and that's something we have to figure out. But most of the Rishonim, or Kemat, all of the Rishonim, assume that, yes, HaKol Shochtim comes to include Nashim as well. And, in fact, that it's obvious, and it doesn't even need to be said. And to quote from the end of Tosfos, that it's only in Temura, for example, where we have to emphasize that women are included, because the language of the psukim would have sounded like it's referring to a male. But here, to quote the end of Tosfos, of Al-Hach, Ein Chiddush B'Yisiyos M'Bish, that there's just no reason to think otherwise. So it's not even something that the Mishnah needs to point out, because it's essentially self-evident. And Tosfos also, if you need further proof, so Tosfos points to the fact that when it comes to Shechitas Kedushin, which one would assume would have a higher standard than Shechitas Chulin, for a number of reasons, we find that Nashim can shecht there also without any limitations. Nashim shochtos l'chachilim. So, is there anything in the way of saying that Nashim can shecht, considering all that? So, there are two things. And not necessarily conclusive things, but two things that get thrown into the discussion. And they're not necessarily related. So, we have, on the one hand, this Hilchas Eretz Yisrael, the Eldad Hadani. And we also have a statement in the Ramah that refers to a minig. So let's talk about them separately because they're not necessarily connected. We don't necessarily have to assume that the minig is based on the Hilchas Eretz Yisrael. So let's talk about them one at a time. So why should it be that there should be any hesitation for women to shecht? And it's important to keep in mind that this discussion and what is quoted is all apparently, at this point at least, not a libid hilchasa, because it does not seem like the Hilchas Eretz Yisrael is adopted by any of the Rishonim or the Poskim as practical halacha. So this is just, as far as trying to understand views in Rishonim, so there is an effort still to figure out where he's coming from. And that's a first stage of the discussion. So what are the issues? What are the possible issues here?
Yeah.
So Tosfos quotes that part, right? So Menashim lo yishchetu mipnei daitin kalos. So what does that mean? Now, I'm probably setting you up for a trap here to even ask that question. yes, you'll all be anonymous in trying to answer the question, so it shouldn't. Yes,
Bob. You seem to.
Yes, sorry? Irving. Yes.
It may seem to indicate that it may seem to indicate something about the nature of Shkita.
Okay.
That may require das.
Okay, well, what kind of das does it mean? What does it mean, daitim kalos? Howard?
Non-emotional.
Non-emotional. Okay, so what?
Isn't this already a concept that exists elsewhere in halachically?
It is, although what's interesting to note is that the usage of this phrase, as it appears in different places, does not seem to have one consistent meaning or one absolute meaning, because there are a number of different usages and they don't seem to all be the same. And some of them are in Rishonim, some are in other sources, so there isn't necessarily one obvious translation of this phrase. Yeah?
I would say with the exception of a few women in the Gemara, we often find that women are necessarily like Osek B'Lim of Torah, so it wouldn't be part of like the Muslim category.
Okay, so Bertram's pointing out that maybe it refers to a lack of education. So if we assume that Stam is Mumcha, so then maybe that's not necessarily present here. So that's an understandable assumption, and it may reflect something, but it's not the way the later Svarim seem to understand it, even though we can see where it's coming from. Alberto?
The Rambam, I'm sure we answered. The Rambam says, doesn't the Rambam count them as Mumchim?
Ah, so the Rambam is one of the vast majority of Rishonim and Poskim that doesn't find an issue here at all. Right, so the Rambam is not concerned with this halacha maisa. Again, it's important to keep reminding ourselves of this because as we see some of these suggestions, we try to figure out how true they are or aren't. So these suggestions are all just in interpreting the position that's not accepted. So the Rambam is among the Kemat consensus that don't conclude this way. But what is it the Hilchos Eretz Yisrael is getting at? So the most common interpretation is what you find in Hagos Maimini and the Beis Yosef quoting as well, that maybe it's a concern of fainting. So maybe daitin kalos, does not mean that there's any lack of education or knowledge. It means that there's a different, maybe you want to call it emotional reaction, however you want to translate that phrase.
Not being able to stomach the whole event.
That's what it sounds like. Again, when
they point that out, that's Farish in the Beis Yosef.
Yeah, that's Farish in the Beis Yosef. Shema Yisalfu. So again, that does not mean anyone has to endorse that perception, but that's one suggestion. Perhaps the most offensive, perhaps, troubling characterization is in the Drisha, where he suggests that maybe it has to do with halachic commitment and therefore ne'amanus. Again, it's not the conclusion that needs to be endorsed on any level. Again, this is a suggestion of one commentary within a non-accepted opinion.
Can you explain the Drisha? Expand
on that. So he connects it to a overall care in halacha, and he makes the comparison to what we saw l'havdil a little bit about Kusim, the whole discussion of Lifnei Iver, that maybe there's enough care about halacha to shech properly, but not necessarily to take responsibility for others. So therefore, maybe it turns into an issue in ne'amanus. Again, this is not a view that is either accepted the halacha, even in practice or in concept. But that's among the suggestions that are made. Just to mitigate the stereotype further, just to mitigate any kind of implications. So that, again, we're already a couple of steps removed from a conclusion because these are theories within a non-accepted halacha. But in the Shevet Sofer, the descendant of the Sofer family, has a sefer Maseches Chulin. So he points out that perhaps this consideration is, first of all, a l'chadchila consideration rather than a b'di'avid consideration. The language here in Tosis is Nashim lo yishchitu. Doesn't necessarily mean to suggest that that it's a puzzle b'di'avid situation, but it's a l'chadchila situation. So maybe it gets to that point that was raised about Rov Mitzuyin Eitzel Shchita Mumchenheim, that most of the people who are involved in Shchita are Mumchen or otherwise appropriate for Shchita. So it's a discussion, we'll get into this maybe tomorrow, whether that itself is a principle of Chachil or a principle of B'dievet, that you found something Shechted, you can assume that it was Shechted properly, or do we say L'Chachil, it wasn't given anything to look into. So if we assume that it's a principle b'di'avad, so then maybe what Hilchos Eretz Yisrael is talking about here is, or even if you assume it's principle of chadchila, but then either way, the question is, how do you relate to that klal when it comes to nashim? So here's a little bit of a preview of just what we'll have to discuss tomorrow in terms of coming to understand that klal. But in general, we'll see, this is to give a little bit of a sense of it, we have to figure out what exactly is the foundation to make such a statement, to say, Rov Mitzuyin Eitzel Shchita Mumchenheim. And is it based on a bare majority, a very strong majority? Is it just enough to serve its purposes? So maybe what we're saying here is essentially that this factor undermines the Rov. So here again, so just to mitigate the bias, however you want to interpret it. So here again, we're several steps away from making any absolute statement about Nashim, but what this suggestion would be is that even within the view of Eldar Hadani and the Hilchos Eretz Yisrael, that's not accepted, even within the theory that sees Nashim Dayt and Kalos as meaning however one wants to interpret it, even that, no one is saying that that's true about all Nashim, but it's saying that to whatever extent it impacts on the Rov. So the Rov that we're able to say, in general, is going to be undermined by that factor. So maybe it's going to come down to a conclusion of we're not going to create a L'Chadchila situation based on this. So again, those theories have various levels of perhaps stereotypes behind them and questionable stereotypes behind them. But again, it's very far from a conclusion for practical purposes. And the point of the Shevet Sofer is adding another element here. He's not saying that it's a judgment about any individual woman, but that it comes to counteract the Rov. But does any of this impact the Ramah? Right, so the Ramah's conclusion is that the minig is not to shecht, is not to have women shecht, and that's the way it remains. So what exactly is that based on? Doesn't sound like that's because of the Hilchos Eretz Yisrael, and that we are factoring that into the halacha here. The Beis Yosef doesn't accept this, not in the Shulchan Aruch or in the Beis Yosef, right? In the Shulchan Aruch, he just leaves it as the bottom line. In the Beis Yosef, he quotes the Ogur as maintaining this position. And the Beis Yosef has a problem with it.
Position of the minog.
Yeah. So what's the Beis Yosef's problem with this position? Essentially says, how do you know that there is a negative minog here? And the question seems to go to the difficulty of establishing something as a practice when it's something that is by omission.
How do we know that there's a negative?
How do we know that there's a minig not to do something here? How do we know that this is the practice not to do? And the way the Beis Yosef spells it out, he says that if we knew that women were pushing to do shechita all the time, or at all, and the answer was always no, we don't do that here, so then okay. So then we could derive from there that there is some kind of an affirmative policy not to do it. But if the idea is that it's just something that we never saw come up, so maybe we just never saw it. And this is based on an idea that you find in Chazal in a few places. One of them is Mishnah Maseches Eidos, and Perek Beis, Mishnah Beis, where the language there is that Lo Ra'inu Eino Raya. The fact that we haven't seen it, you can't count that as a proof. Beis, Beis. It appears in Maseches Ksubos as well. It appears in a few places. That just because we haven't witnessed it doesn't mean that it's necessarily indicative of anything. Maybe we just haven't paid attention, or it hasn't come up. So this is a discussion, how much weight to put on this. The Shach, if you take a look, the Shach was on your list. So the Shach quotes from the Tshuvas Ma'arik that maybe when it comes to a minig, lo ra'inu raya. In other words, what is he saying, Levi?
I think the essence of a minhag would be is just what we do.
Right.
So if it's not done, then therefore, like that's what a minhag is. It's not that it has so much of a basis in svara or halacha. It's just what's done, what isn't done. So, in that case, if something isn't done, we just keep it as if not being done because that's a minhag.
So just flesh that out a little bit more. So tell me if this is what you're saying. Okay.
Yeah. Trying to make a halacha, I guess. If it was usher, there would be, let's say, a little bit more reasoning behind it.
Okay. Right.
There would be a svara. A lot of times in the minhag started at some point. There might have been that reasoning then. Now let's say the reasoning doesn't exist, but we still keep it anyway because that's the svara.
Okay, so let's flesh that out a little bit. So I think what you're saying, tell me if I'm getting it right, is that if you're trying to say something is usur, mutter, minhadin, that something is absolutely prohibited or absolutely permitted, so then to quote your eyewitness testimony is not really going to be helpful, because there's a major pircha here. There's a major counter-argument that the fact that you never saw it happen, so then that doesn't tell you that it's prohibited. Maybe there are other reasons why it didn't happen. So that doesn't have any weight in the process of determining whether something is permitted or prohibited. Now, if you saw it happening, and you saw it happening by people who are reliable, so then that would seem to indicate that it's permitted, and then you have to figure out exactly what the details are, but it would give you a baseline to assume that it's permitted. But to say it never happened, so then that doesn't necessarily enter into the discussion of why something should be mutter or usur. If we assume that there is a internal explanation to why something is mutter or usur. But if we come from the assumption that we're not talking about the halacha in and of itself, but we're talking about a minig, so then what Levi is saying is a minig is based on practice. So then, within that standard, so then practice is by definition relevant, and not seeing it, that still contributes to that discussion. But the truth is, it needs a little bit more explanation, because part of the logic of Lo Ra'inu Eino Raya is that it's not necessarily meaningful that you haven't seen something, because it hasn't come up. So that's essentially what the Beis Yosef was arguing, says that if we knew that it came up, and people kept saying, no, sorry, it's not something we're going to let you do, so then, okay, we can draw an inference from that negativity. But if it's not necessarily something that ever happened, so then we don't know that there was a minig not to do it. And this is what you also find the factors mentioned in some of the Svarim as well, that maybe the criterion should be, is it shchiach or not? That if it's a common situation, so then if you'd expect it to be common and it never happens, so then that's something that we should pay more attention to. But if it's something that wouldn't be common in the first place, so you know, we've never had a shochet named Lifferstein, so then maybe just nobody named Lifferstein ever applied to be the shochet. So you can't necessarily derive too much from that. So that seems to be independent of whether it's a minig or a din. But the distinction of minig still probably means that the standard is going to be different in terms of defining it. And that since the minig is defined by practice rather than logic alone, so then we're more ready to look at whether we see it or we don't see it. In the Shiurim of Rav Soloveitchik, so there are two pieces on this first question of Shechita by Nashim. So first he talks about this Ma'arik and about bringing other possible applications, some of Hilchos Avelus, you can take a look over there, about where maybe when it comes to a minig, okay, we're more ready to look at the absence of practice as proof, as opposed to something that we are maintaining is Meikar HaDin. But again, we still have to address the fact that maybe the objection, like the Beis Yosef said, is still true, that if it never really came up, so then even by a minig, why should that necessarily be relevant? Even if we do shift the standard of proof. But still, it would seem to be a relevant question. In the second part, so he brings in another element. And he understands that the point of the Rama is that the shochet is not necessarily just performing a discrete act of shechita, but that a shochet is a communal appointment. And that somebody who is going to be serving as a shochet is doing so in a somewhat formal position. And in the printed shiurim, so there he fleshes this out by noting that there is a practice to give a kabbalah to somebody who wants to come in shecht, that somebody who's going to take on this position has to establish that he knows what he's doing. And that process of confirming that this individual is knowledgeable is itself like a communal appointment. So what's the issue there? So he connects this to the idea that one finds in the Rambam, this is in Hilchos Melachim in Perek Aleph, Halacha Hey, that the din that we have, that when it comes to appointing a king over the Jewish people, we say Melech Velo Malka, that it should be a male king, that there is an extension of this to any kind of communal authority or appointment. The language might be important, but for now we'll just talk about it generally. Called a srara or a mesima, that is going to be specific only to men. So therefore, if there is a communal appointment that is involved in being a shochet, so then perhaps that's what the Rama is referring to. And this could also explain another point that the Beis Yosef also brings up and criticizes, that the Beis Yosef quotes the Kolbo that seems to distinguish and says that women can shecht for themselves, but not for others. So setting aside the Drisha that we mentioned before about the raising the issue of Ne'manas, but the Beis Yosef already says that he doesn't understand such a distinction. That there is no chiluk that we find in halacha between what's necessary to shecht for yourself and what's necessary to shecht for others. So therefore, if this is a problem, it should be a problem whether it's benola benatzma or whether it's for others. Hi.
Is there any parallel where that is the mitzvah? The person's able to disnu for himself and not for others?
Well, it gets into, you know, the Gemara talks about that with the whole Lifnei-Iver question, you know. So theoretically, that is a component to this discussion. But bottom line, the Beis Yosef is saying that the rule as far as what creates the Kasher Shechita shouldn't draw a distinction. So here, as the Rav explained, that could answer the question, that it's distinguishing between a discrete act of Shechita and an active shchita that was functioning as a communal role. So, like all the Rishonim say, that if we're just looking at shchita as the active shchita, so all the Rishonim have already said that Nashim are kasher for that, so Anisha is able to effect a kasher shchita. But if we're talking about in the communal role as a shochet, so that's where we get into this issue. And that's where we find that there is perhaps a focus on the communal appointment. The Rav Shechter often points out in talking about this that this was the metzias in terms of the role of the shochet in, say, European culture, in the Jewish communities in Europe. That especially back in the day when Sfarim were not easily available and education, halachic education, was not easily available. So the Shochet essentially had a role that was kind of like an assistant rabbi, because the Shochet had to be knowledgeable in the acts of the rules of Shechita. So therefore he was essentially functioning as one of the halachic experts of the community. So therefore it was somewhat of a similar to rabbinic position and similar to an assistant rabbi, so to speak. And that's essentially what the Rama is getting at, that there is a minig issue here. So it's important to just appreciate a little bit how things fit in or don't fit in. So this, as you may be aware, is definitely a part of the debate and a part of the discussion and contemporary halachic discourse regarding the whole question of rabbinic ordination for women. And Rav Soloveitchik has been frequently quoted by Rav Shechter and many others as expressing opposition through what is contained in this Rama, that there is an issue essentially stemming from the concern of Srara. So this, as you can imagine, is a highly controversial topic. I think as far as we relate to it as a matter of contemporary halacha, I think it's important to appreciate that essentially it involves a convergence of a lot of different elements that we've mentioned so far today. So we've mentioned this aspect of Srara, this aspect of the Shochet possibly having that concern. We've mentioned the Minig element and the question of Lori Inu Eino Raya and whether that is relevant to determining a Minig and whether that's relevant to determining Halacha. So I think the attitude, so for example, if you've read the OU position paper of 3 years ago on this topic. So it's important to appreciate that the bottom line position expressed there is a reflection of all of these together, that essentially there is an understanding that the attitude of Klal Yisrael has been that there is a Masorah not to ordain women. And the question then comes up, okay, so is that a meaningful Masorah or not? Is that just something that we say, Lo Re'inu Eino Raya? Is that something that doesn't have any kind of inherent relevance because maybe it just never came up? Or is there more to it? So one of the elements of the discussion is, are we saying that this is something that reflects some absolute halachic principle? In which case, the discussion of Lara'inu and Araya becomes more relevant? Or are we essentially saying that this has become the hanhaga of Klal Yisrael over the past many centuries, which is also binding, you know, which is crucially binding, which is a major part of what we call Mesorah and what keeps Klal Yisrael going. But then this element that the role of Lara'inu and Araya may play a bigger role is also a part of the discussion. So the Shach's invoking that there are contexts in which Lara'inu and Araya is more significant may also reflect the fact that if we say that this is a Hanhaga Sapsak, that this is something which is determined by the halachic intuition of Klal Yisrael as a matter of policy, so then that also affects the standard of where Lara'inu and Araya is going to play a role. Everyone following so far? Make sense? So that's a part of it. So then, as we mentioned, also the question is, so to what extent can we say that it never came up before? Can we say that if we say Lara'inu and Araya is going to be calibrated to some extent, like the Beis Yosef says, to how common is something? So was this something that ever had a chance to be established before? So here it would seem that it did have a chance. It's true that the number of educated women is much more than it ever was, to a tremendous, essentially, a exponential degree. There certainly are far, far, far more educated women than there ever have been in Klal Yisrael, certainly even just in the past few decades. But we also know from Shas and Rishonim that there have been throughout, and that's what the Rishonim struggle with, and the question in the context of Devorah. So the Rishonim, Maseches Sanhedrin, try to figure out how exactly is it that Devorah was functioning as a shofetes in light of the majority assumption there at Tzimachlokas. There is a view in Rishonim that women can serve as dayanim, but the majority view in Rishonim, the way Shulchan Aruch paskens, is that they do not. So the question is, so how exactly do we account for that? So it's clear throughout halachic literature that there have been highly educated women. So to say that it was never a havamina before is difficult to say. So then the question is, how do you approach that negative practice, that absence of something happening? So in general, it's a important part of the process. We don't believe, as is sometimes portrayed, that we only just blindly follow tradition. So if something never happened, we just never do it no matter what. But there is a process to try to understand why is it that something never happened. So for example, if you were to say that, okay, we know that in a certain community, they didn't use microwave ovens, so maybe there's a minhag not to use microwave ovens. So you have to figure out, so were microwave ovens invented yet? If they weren't invented, so then it's not meaningful that they weren't using microwave ovens. So then the next question is, okay, maybe they were invented, but maybe they were very expensive and very rare, and people thought they were dangerous. I don't know. So then you have to consider that. All right, let's see. So maybe they theoretically could have been possible, but there were reasons why they wouldn't have been widespread. So then that becomes a more complicated discussion. You can't necessarily just dismiss it and say it was not around as a possibility, so it's nothing. But on the other hand, there are other factors that may have been circumstance dependent. So then maybe if you say, okay, so then now they're more affordable, or now we don't think they're dangerous, so then maybe that's going to be also relevant to figuring out how to take that. But if you have communities where they were easily available and not perceived as dangerous, and still we see that people definitively didn't use them, so then, okay, it's still not the end of the discussion, so we have to figure out, can we think of any kind of a halachic reason why it may not have been used? So that becomes, again, a complicated, involved discussion. It's not sort of automatic, but then you try to figure out whether or not this minig may reflect something That's a part of the Masora, because the whole notion of a minig is that we assume, as Rav Soloveitchik explained, others explained, that a minig is something that is the halachic intuition of Klal Yisrael formalizing a certain halachic or hashkafic value. So if we can't find any kind of a hashkafic or halachic value, so then it's hard to say why it should be a minig. But if there is something that could be, so then we have to be very careful in how to look at that. So here you find that this idea of Srara, which Rav Soloveitchik emphasized, is a possibility. Not everyone agreed with this as the necessary source, but it's one of the many possibilities that are invoked as a part of the discussion. Now, there are many questions as far as the absolute halachic application of the principle of Srara. Many point out that the Rambam's application of Srara in such a broad way is not one that many other Rishonim agreed with. So it's a major question of whether that is the bottom line halacha. Rav Moshe Feinstein has an often quoted tshuva about that, where he talks about the role of Mashgiach in the Kashrus context. There's a lot to discuss about whether this is a accepted position, that Srara is so broadly applied, and whether any given situation involves Srara and how you define Srara is a legitimate topic for a lot of discussion. However, I'm not sure if one needs to conclude decisively on that question in order to understand the continuation of the practice regarding smicha for women, because what seems to be likely is that this is Hanhagas Klal Yisrael to carry on this practice based on a number of possible halachic formulations and halachic considerations. So this may be one of them, and it's possible to come to that conclusion without necessarily endorsing all implications of the Rambam's position about Srara, or necessarily assuming that every possible definition is going to fit. I think it's still possible that this is a contributing factor to the minig, even if that's not necessarily an absolute, unavoidable halachic conclusion within the lumdus and the logic of Srara. Does that make sense? Follow what I'm saying? So that could also be relevant to another detail, which is also discussed in the Shiurim of the Rav here in Chulu. Because the question is, what about a ger? So a ger, the Rambam also discusses as having a issue with a Srara, as being excluded from Srara. So we don't say that a ger has any issue as far as Shechita is considered. So there he mentions one possible distinction between the concept as applied to gerim and the concept as applied to nashim. It could be that this goes back to the minig issue, that, for example, it may be, this is just a theory, not saying that it's necessarily true, but it could be that, this is how Rabbi Bleich has explained, for example, the idea of Melech Bala Malka, that it stems from a certain perception of tznius, certainly how Rav Schechter understands it as well. So therefore, again, if we're assuming that it has to do with a minig approach, so then it could be that the halachic attitude of Klal Yisrael towards the concept of Srara for Nashim and the concept of Srara for Gerim has been perceived differently, has developed differently based on that consideration, to see them as two different concepts, even if they have similar language. So to that extent, it may be that may affect the question of smicha as well. So what emerges is that there is a lot of room for discussion about many of the details of why this should be, and it impacts also a lot of side questions, so the question of shul presidents and the question of other communal roles is a topic of much debate. There is a lot of machlokas about that, but the details are all subject to different perceptions, but the attitude, as it was saw displayed in the OU paper regarding the overall question of smicha specifically, is that there does seem to be a intentional practice of Klal Yisrael to avoid that, and that perhaps that reflects Hanhagas Klal Yisrael, which in order to be meaningful should reflect some halachic value, and this is one possibility of what it might be. If not, there are other possibilities as well. And that all of that leaves us with the bottom line that the Masorah of Klal Yisrael reflects a certain approach, and that we are, as we know, obligated to be very careful about the meaningful Masorah of Klal Yisrael. So any questions about that? Anything that clear? Okay, so just to recap some of the major points that we saw, and just to bring it all together. So we saw that bottom line halacha is that nashim are kasher for shechita, and at least as far as the validity of the shechita inherently is concerned, that really is the view of almost, cannot really, all the Rishonim, all the authoritative Rishonim, and it's the view of Tosfos, it's the view of the Rambam, it's the view of the Shulchan Aruch. And Tosfos considers it essentially to be obvious and doesn't even need to be pointed out in the Mishnah. And also because of the din that we find by Kachim also seems to lead us to that conclusion that that should be the policy by Chulin as well. However, many of the Rishonim quote the view of Eldad Hadani in the Sefer Hilchos Eretz Yisrael, that Nashim are not supposed to shecht because of Dait and Kalos, and they don't accept this view for the most part because of these various objections. And they also point out, we didn't mention this before, maybe just to also throw this out, so some of them add that the Sefer Hilchos Eretz Yisrael overall is not necessarily reflecting mainstream halacha, and that he innovated chumras that don't reflect what the actual halachic requirements are. They give another example of a position that he writes there that is not reflected in halachic practice. It says that if you shecht without a bracha, so the shechita is no good. So normally we say, by mitzvos in general, that brachos ein ma'akvos, that if you don't make a bracha on something, that's a separate requirement from the mitzvah, and it doesn't invalidate the mitzvah. So if one doesn't make a bracha on shechita, it should be true also. We saw that explicitly in the Rambam and otherwise. And it's true in general as a policy with mitzvos that if you don't make a bracha, the mitzvah is good. So this is something that some of the Rishonim quote that the Hilchos Eretz Yisrael has that's also not reflected by halacha. I wonder, just to throw this out there as half of a svara, I wonder if there's any connection between the two, that I have no idea if there's anywhere to go with this, but part of what we've been discussing the whole time is the question of whether who is kosher for shechita or not, whether it reflects any kind of a mitzvah status as far as shechita is concerned. So we talked about how shechita is supposed to, at least on some level, reflect a certain attitude. So maybe what the Hilchos Eretz Yisrael is saying is that the attitude of shechita is even more important than every other mitzvah, and that every other mitzvah, theoretically, you could be yotzei without making a bracha on it, but here the bracha that calls attention to its mitzvah intent is uniquely important. And there's a parallel to this, to the position of Rabbi Yaakov Emden, that when it comes to Neiros Chanukah, the bracha is uniquely important because we have to advertise what the candles are for. Also not accepted by halacha by others. But when it comes to this position, I don't know if maybe that's what he's saying. I don't know if that has any relevance on why he would further narrow who it is who is able to shecht. I don't know exactly how to draw a line from that position to the other, but if there's any commonality between these two positions, I'm not sure if there's any basis to say that, but just a thought to consider. So the Rishonim in general, while not accepting his position, made various theories as to why it was. The language of Nashim Dait and Kalos is subject to many different interpretations in many different contexts, so it's not clear what to do with it. It does not seem to be an issue of education or knowledge. Some of the Rishonim, the Hagos Maimini and the Beis Yosef, quote the idea that it has to do with not fainting, and that's a question whether that plays any role here. The Drisha has the more difficult position, even that it has something to do with Na'amanus. And again, we emphasized, as far as what the implications are, that neither of these have to reflect a conclusion because they're both theories as far as a position that's not accepted. And as the Shevet Sofer added, it doesn't even necessarily reflect the theory of the non-accepted position about every woman, but that maybe it just goes to undermine the chazaka of Rav Mitzrayim Eitzel Shechita Mumchen Heim, again, which is a topic we have to try to understand a little more, and we'll try to take that up tomorrow. So one way or another, it doesn't seem like this position impacts halacha at all. Although the Rama says that, against the Shulchan Aruch, the Rama says that the minig is women don't shecht. So what exactly to do with that minig is the question. Where is it from and where do you apply it? So the Beis Yosef quoted this from the Augur. The Beis Yosef doesn't understand it because just because we haven't seen it doesn't mean it's meaningful or you know, in a raya. And the Shach pointed out that maybe when it comes to a minig, lo re'inu is a raya. And we've discussed, as Levi pointed out, that we can understand on some level why the halacha and the minig should have different standards as far as how to weigh something like lo re'inu. Minig is about practice, and halacha maybe is more about its internal logic, and not seeing something doesn't tell us anything about its internal logic. But still, we have to still calibrate that to some level of frequency, because the basic objection of the Beis Yosef should be true by a minig also, that if something never comes up, then it doesn't mean that there's any actual minig not to do it. So then we also noted that Rav Soloveitchik explained that the position of the Rama seems to stem from the fact that the Shochet is a communal appointment, and historically had a role like an assistant rabbi. He was one of the most knowledgeable individuals. And in the Shiurim, he emphasizes the fact that it needs a Kabbalah, which we should emphasize is not to say that women would have any bit of a harder time getting this Kabbalah. It's not about that. It's not about the knowledge itself, but it's about once we say that it comes with a formal recognition, so then he understood it takes on a appointment status, and that triggers the issues of Sarara in the Rambam's formulation. So we discussed that this is invoked in the discussion about women rabbis Bizban Hazeh, and it's a very controversial discussion. So we explained that really it draws upon all of these elements, that whether or not one agrees that a Lumdisha analysis of the issue of Sarara would lead to the inescapable conclusion that women cannot be rabbis, so that's subject to a lot of machlokas, but it's not necessary for the overall conclusion that there is a hanhagas klal Yisrael not to do it, and that despite the prevalence, or despite the, I shouldn't say prevalence, but despite the presence of highly educated women throughout the history of klal Yisrael, as the Rishonim discuss, certainly Dvorah and others, those quoted in the Gemara, Berea and the like, certainly there have been highly educated women throughout the existence of Klal Yisrael. So whether or not that happened on a mass level, so that's something that only recently was there available education on a mass level, creating exponentially more educated Jewish women, but there have been throughout. So therefore, the fact that there hasn't been smicha given, so that presumably has some basis for it, and so then the question is how to figure out what that basis would be. So the concept, the Rambam's notion about Sarara, may be one possible basis for that. There are those who felt so more strongly, there are those who felt so less strongly, but there is a minute component to it, which means doesn't necessarily have to indicate that the Rambam's position is accepted 100%, that the Rambam's position is accepted across the board, or would necessarily come to this conclusion inescapably, but is a part of how the Hanhagas Klal Yisrael developed, and that may also contribute to why there is a different attitude towards Nashim as opposed to Gerim, which is one of the points also discussed in the Shirim of the Rav from a slightly different approach, and that may also be relevant to this overall discussion. So it continues to be a controversial topic, but I just think those are some of the elements that need to be appreciated as far as how the mechanics of that discussion go. Hi.
That'd be possible, okay.
About which point?
Just in terms of,
So that's what it says in the Rama on the Shulchan Aruch, that the Shulchan Aruch feels that it's not objectionable at all. And the Rama writes that this has been the minig, that as far as the Kamenil Shochet, there is a minig not to do so. And if you see in the Rav Shiurim, he also adds that some of the posts can point out that especially if the community makes a policy that only somebody who's officially approved can shecht, so it's relevant here to understand what does that mean. So does that mean that this is because this is how they're making the policy, so that should be across the board? Or what if somebody doesn't know about this policy in shechts anyway? Right? So we're not necessarily saying that their shechita is inherently any different than anybody else's. It's just a matter of the communal policy. So to say that that policy has an impact, is that because the community has the ability to actively negate other people's shechita, even though it's otherwise kosher? Or does it reflect the fact that there is a certain communal appointment that is a part of the whole shechita consumer relationship? And maybe that's what that reflects, even without bestowing upon the community any power to negate the shechita of somebody who otherwise would be qualified. Okay, any further questions about that? Okay, so God willing, tomorrow we'll give you some more makoros to look at in terms of the question of Chazaka, Rov Mitzvah Nechel Shechita Mumchim Heim, and we'll try to get a perspective on that over the next day or two. But I wish everyone a wonderful day. Should be only good things, and I will, God willing, see you tomorrow. All right, yeah,